Hey, good morning, everyone. As Ellen said, I'm Patrick. I'll be talking about some of the biological mechanisms and ecological mechanisms that are underlying what Adam and Ellen were talking about earlier. And again, so I'll be talking about both my results, but also equally the results that Leslie and Meng have been working on at Illinois and New Hampshire. So we're interested in biological communities because they're essential for, you know, increasing the level of these ecosystem services that we're all interested in, either directly or indirectly. And our goal is to create higher levels of these, of course, within the constraints of agronomic systems. And so we find soil functional zone management to be a pretty interesting system for trying this out, because while it does have these disturbance areas that we've been talking to about, it also has these stable zones that we think create refuges for especially more disturbance-sensitive taxa, right? And so we would expect then, as a result, to have larger and more diverse soil communities, and maybe as a result, enhanced ecosystem services. If we throw a cover crop into this mixture, then we might see an amplification effect as well. So as I explore these ideas today, I'll first talk about the ecology of these systems in terms of what soil environments we think are structuring these communities and how the communities are responding to them, and then go into some of these more functional outcomes of these community results. So to dive in then, soil functional zone management creates these really strong, distinct environmental gradients of disturbance, temperature, moisture, energy, and mutualistic partners that we know are important for structuring communities, mesofaunal communities, mycorrhizal communities. And it's doing these along the spatial dimensions of horizontally and vertically, as well as across time. And so in this ridge-till system, which of course is our model SFZM system, we have in the row what amounts to essentially a no-till system that's raised above the rest of the field, and that contrasts with this inter-row system, which at least early in the season is relatively disturbed. And then, of course, compared to the chisel plow system, which is uniformly disturbed twice a year, So the area that we're sampling is shown up in these boxes here, and you can see that while in the ridge-till system, while we do have quite a bit of disturbance, it's around the stable area that's always there, and so this is where the refuge idea comes from. And so we're, again, adding to this a little bit, adding some temporal diversity through this cover cropping treatment as well. So these are what these environments look like in the field. Here on the left, you see the ridge-till system with a strong contrast between the row and the inter-row. On the right, the relatively uniform chisel plow. Our cover crops are showing up towards the top of the screen. And then by the time we're ready to terminate them, there'll be this nice lush green mat, lots of residue for things to chew on. So our hypotheses then around this refuge idea is that these stable zones create refuges for disturbance-sensitive taxa that cover crops might complement. And we expect to see this in terms of greater, broader level diversity, as well as some taxa-specific responses, and maybe also some population or abundance level measures as well. And we would expect this then to correlate with, say, greater pest suppression, some more weed suppression, and greater nutrient uptake. So, as I said, these are not all my results. Meng and I together looked at mycorrhizal communities. Meng's focus was on weed suppression. I did phosphorus uptake. And then Leslie took control of the mesofauna. To bring out the big picture that we have here of how these communities are responding, I'm going to mix all of our results together and present them in the order that you see in this blue box. And so up at the right-hand side, there will be some metadata about what these samples are, where they came from, down below, quick interpretation, and then methods and citations, if they're relevant. So to start then at these broader diversity measures, these are some results that Leslie put together about the Shannon diversity of these mesofaunal communities in these different treatments. Excuse me. And so the important thing to see here is that while we do see a statistically significant interaction between tillage and cover cropping in the level of diversity of these communities, rather than like try and tease that apart, the more important thing is that the effect is actually quite small between these treatments as well. And when we look at the mycorrhizal communities as well, these are some data that Hmong put together, partitioning the variability in these communities across the roots of corn and some weed species in these treatments. And she found, again, that while management is important, it's really quite a small amount of the picture at this broad level. But that doesn't mean that there aren't interesting things going on in here in terms of the communities. So Leslie also performed an indicator analysis of the mesofauna that she found. And in general, the take-home message here is that these zone management systems support, or the taxa in these zone management systems that are indicative of the zone management systems come from a broader range of trophic levels, whereas in the uniform systems, they're much, much narrower and more specialized. And then some of these zone management one indicators are also quite disturbance sensitive, which supports, of course, our refuge hypothesis. This is a similar type of analysis that I put together from Minnesota, showing the relative frequency of observation of an OTU, which is essentially a species of mycorrhizae, in these different management systems. So the way to interpret this is by looking at, say, these Gigaspiraceae family in green, and noticing that they're showing up almost exclusively in the soil functional zone management treatment rather than the uniform tillage treatment. And so these Gigaspiraceae are thought to be relatively good at delivering phosphorus and also sensitive to disturbance, again supporting the importance of the stability in the zone management system. The Glomaceae, in contrast, are much more cosmopolitan and in the spectrum of mycorrhizae are thought to be disturbance tolerant to some extent. And then finally, moving on to the quantitative responses, here Leslie showed that tillage, the soil functional zone management, increased just the total abundance of these mesofauna by about 33% across years. When you consider that these mesofauna are, they're macroscopic and these disturbance systems tend to kill them. This again speaks to how important this stable zone is. And likewise, we see colonization rates of mycorrhizae also about 25% higher in these stable zonal systems, colonization being a similar measure of abundance of mycorrhizae. And so at the community level, then, we have really quite compelling support that these refuges exist and that they're changing the communities. Of course, what we really want is more productivity from our soil, right? So that's what I'll talk about next. So looking at these indicator species that Leslie pulled out, one interesting thing to note is that one of the indicators of the uniform tillage system is this Delia platura seed corn maggot, which is an agronomically important pest. And one reason that it might be so much more prevalent in this uniform tillage system rather than the ridge till system is the presence of these soft-bodied omnivores, which are actually quite predaceous and could be controlling this, for example. Hmong looked at weed suppression potential in these systems by calculating this index of absolute competition intensity, which is just the difference between weed biomass grown in competition with corn versus weed biomass grown on its own, and looked at how soil environmental factors, corn growth, and as well as mycorrhizal colonization might be affecting that using a structural equation modeling approach. And so a higher value indicates that the weed is more tolerant to corn competition. And the results that she found show that these mycorrhizae can be quite important And the direction that they change this competitiveness really depends on what the weed is and what the environment is as well. And so, for example, with prickly cider, which is a good host weed, we see a strong, a significant positive correlation between colonization rate and weed competitiveness, as shown by this blue arrow in bold, suggesting that, you know, higher colonization makes these weeds more tolerant to competition with a corn plant or more competitive. And at the same time, an increase in soil moisture decreases these colonization rates, as shown by this, by the solid or the dashed red line. In contrast to this, looking at the effects of colonization on water hemp competitiveness, and as well as these environmental factors, we see a much more complex and in some ways opposite effect. So water hemp is not a great host. It's a some people consider it a non-host, and colonization rates tend to suppress its ability to compete. However, a higher bulk density number, which we generally also associate with ridge tillage, at least in Minnesota, increased its ability to compete. And then finally, I looked at phosphorus uptake by corn plants at V1, about 10 days after planting, and found a quite strong and significant effect of tillage on phosphorus uptake. And this was independent of differences in shoot mass across these treatments too. And so looking at this in the context of greater colonization rates in these soil, in these zone management systems, as well as the presence of these taxa that are thought to be really good at delivering phosphorus, provides pretty compelling, if circumstantial, evidence that these mycorrhizal communities are actually doing something for us as well. So you can imagine phosphorus deficiency early in the season shows up not infrequently in our part of the country, and while oftentimes it doesn't necessarily translate to higher or yield losses, you can imagine if we get hit with an early season drought, for example, then this could be an important result. And so overall then, we see, again, good evidence that these microbial and mesophytal communities are responding to our system, especially the refuge of our system, and in terms of potential weed suppressions, potential pathogen, or excuse me, pest suppression, and then phosphorus uptake, we could see some interesting and compelling results that provide evidence that this is a management system to continue working on. And so with that, Leslie, Meng, and I would all like to thank these people that have helped us out so much. Here are our contact information, and I will take any questions.
Like after the measured on the ridge or in the furrow or where?
Only the ridge.
Yep.
Do you think that the lack of a cover crop effect has something to do with the amount of biomass that was produced, or would be going to be turned in?
In terms of broader structure or just in general? So the biomass responses across of the cover crops across the sites was pretty variable. I'm most familiar with Minnesota, of course, and for the most part, was quite small. Also in terms of the mycorrhizae, though, rye, we use rye, and rye is a host, but it's not the best host either, right? So it could be a little bit of what we chose and how well we planted it and how well it grew, yeah. Leslie can talk about what she thinks about it in terms of the mesofauna, if she wants to.
We also have a very low stand of the crop, and we have but I have heard it think that for my critters that have more to do with that have already reached the maximum, like that stabilization period.
Yes.
And again, so how did you measure
which measure?
Just
arbuscules? Yeah, percent colonization by arbuscules is what I did.
Okay, so would that perhaps not be the most proper measure for activity, given that a lot of that activity is really the hyphal connection? I know down where it's a little bit drier, it's that mucilaginous material that is really creating some of the function. So looking at the ecosystem function, there's many things that can create arbuscule numbers.
Right.
And I've counted many in our I don't think it necessarily tells you the right story because you don't know what, are more arbuscules better.
Right.
Maybe not necessarily.
Right. Definitely. We don't know how active they are, what they're connected to. I totally agree with you. I am working on height length density numbers as well, which I think would be more indicative of actual activity and potential function of these communities. This is what we have at this point.
And just to see, I have heard the tagus flora and walnut, if you want to compare a weed dam and what I call a super dam, those arbuscles are very, very different when you look at the tagus flora. And you can see where that specialized benefit occurred. So again, I'm just wondering about counting arbuscles, what it really tells us. And I don't have the answer. That's why we've done working above ground with people.
Yeah, I don't blame you.